Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. You've heard of Our Bodies, Ourselves, the famous feminist book on women's health. Well, a new resource guide for the transgender community is called Trans Bodies, Trans Selves. It's written for and by members of the trans community, and it's just out. Laura Erickson-Schroth is the editor of the book, and she joins us now. She's also a psychiatry resident at NYU Medical Center and a board member of GLMA, which is Health Professionals Advancing LGBT Equality. Welcome to WNYC, Laura.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's great to be here.
And Aidan Key is with us, director of the advocacy group Gender Diversity. He wrote the section of the book on children, serving as a guide for parents of gender non-conforming kids. Aidan, welcome to WNYC.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And listeners, we can definitely take your calls. If you're a member of the trans community in any way and you have a question or want to share a story, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Laura, the title of the book, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, obvious reference to our bodies, ourselves. Are you hoping that this book does certain things for the trans community that that book did for women in general? Is that how you approached it?
Absolutely. I grew up with that book, and it was something that I looked to as this wonderful resource. It was started by a group of women in the late 60s and early 70s who got together to talk to each other about their health, because it was a time when about 90% of physicians were men, and the women weren't getting what they needed from their physicians, so they looked to each other for health information. And we're hoping that this book will do something very similar, that it will allow trans people to talk to each other about their health and also about a lot of other issues in their lives.
So let's start with there being so much confusion in the general public over labels and pronouns. We noticed that you did a Q&A with the Times, and that was the first question you were asked, whether the term is transsexual or transgender. So could you talk about those terms a little bit?
Sure. So transgender is the more, I would say, modern term that many people use, and many people shorten it to trans. Transsexual was a term that developed earlier in the 20th century. And transgender is supposed to be an umbrella term that invites a lot of people in. And so there are people who identify as transsexual or people who identify as transgender, genderqueer, a number of different identities. It doesn't mean that you have to have had surgeries or taken hormones. It's a very inviting term that invites in anyone who feels their gender nonconforming.
Do you want to get in on that, Aidan?
Well, sure. I think, first of all, I'd like to wish anybody good luck that's trying to keep up with the language within and without transgender community, because we're creating it. We're lacking in language to describe our experiences and our identities, and that's what's happening. That's part of the growth of our movement for acknowledgement and recognition, is to find language that works for us.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and 90.3 WNJO Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio, as we talk to Laura Erickson-Schroth, editor of Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, and contributor Aidan Key. And listeners, our phones are open, 212-433-WNYC. If you want to call as a member of the transgender community and you have a question or want to share a story, you know, elevate the awareness of other listeners who may not be as knowledgeable, talk about, I don't know, how to pick a name, what to tell the human resources department of your company, your parents or your friends, talk about your rights, anything at all, 212-433-9692. Parents of transgender individual, we had a great call from a very open and accepting and loving parent just the other day who wanted to share her story. If you do too or have a question about a child who is gender nonconforming, the phones are wide open, 212-433 WNYC 433-9692. Laura, the actress Laverne Cox, was on the cover of Time recently. She's one of the stars of the Netflix show Orange is the New Black, where she plays a trans woman, as many people know. And the headline on that Time magazine cover was "The Transgender Tipping Point." What do you think about that framing, Aidan?
Well, I think folks like myself who are doing work within the transgender community or with families who have transgender kids are feeling that very acutely. It is a tipping point. I'd say a good 6 years ago or so, I might get one or two calls from new parents a month, and now I'm getting them daily, and that's in my geographic region of Washington State. So it definitely is a tipping point. People who are looking for understanding and resources in a time where they're still being created, like this anthology. So I think that's definitely a great title to describe where we are.
Here's a clip of Laverne Cox on Katie Kirk's show talking about her character on Orange is the New Black.
I play Sophia Brissett, and Sophia is an incarcerated trans woman at Litchfield Prison, and she's in jail for, I don't like giving this away, but she's in jail for credit card fraud. She used stolen credit cards to finance her transition, and now she's the prison hairstylist, and she has a wonderful story, her backstory with her family, and she's also a wife and a mother. She's beautifully complicated, and I love playing her.
And in that same interview with Laverne Cox, Katie Kirk asked what became a widely shared and criticized as inappropriate question. And I want to play this one-minute exchange because I think it raises some central issues.
All of us want to be educated, and Carmen was sort of recoil a little bit when I asked her about her transition, and she said that people who are not educated about this or familiar with sort of transgenders, they're preoccupied with the genitalia question. And I'm wondering if you think that's true and how if you have the same feelings about that Carmen does.
I do. I was very proud of you for saying that. And I do feel like there's a preoccupation with that. And I think that the preoccupation with transition and with surgery objectifies trans people. And then we don't get to really deal with the real lived experiences. The reality of trans people's lives is that so often we're targets of violence. We experience discrimination disproportionately to the rest of the community. Our unemployment rate is twice the national average. If you're trans person of color, it's four times the national average. The homicide rate in the LGBT community is highest amongst trans women. And when we focus on transition, we don't actually get to talk about those things.
Laverne Cox talking to Katie Kirk about the preoccupation with transition. And Laura, that same statistic that she cited about unemployment is in your book, in the section on employment. Workplace harassment is a big issue too. So what advice do you give readers about how to deal with workplace harassment and about employment generally, since there's no federal protection per se, right?
Right. I mean, I think that's one of the things that we're pushing for, that a lot of people have been involved with, is something called the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which would be a federal law that protects people based on sexual orientation and gender identity from being discriminated against or fired at work. This is a huge problem in LGBTQ communities across the board, and transgender communities especially. People are having a very difficult time with employment discrimination. And we have advice for them in the book, but we can't always give people the answers to this, because it's a very difficult problem.
And new, as Aidan keeps stressing so much about this, is your book refers readers to a site called TJobBank that lists jobs posted by trans-friendly employers. And I see there's a sidebar on the story of Susan Stanton, who had been the city manager of Largo, Florida, when she announced that she was undergoing sex reassignment. You want to tell that story?
Sure. I mean, I think that from what I understand, it was a pretty complex issue, and it was related to sex discrimination. She was a public employee. And beyond that, I don't know as much about the details as some other people, but I think that it's something that the news took hold of. And I think that what it did was it put some of these issues on a national stage.
Alisa in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alisa.
Hi, this is so exciting. I listen to every day, and I've never been on the air before.
Thanks for calling. Glad you're here.
So I was calling because I teach a class at Teachers College, Columbia University. It's called Reconstructing Gender, Exploring Transgender Experiences. And it's actually the first class of its kind where it's exclusively focused on transgender people at Columbia University, other than special classes they've had where people come in and teach one class and then leave. And what I wanted to add to the conversation is that what I think is really problematic is the lack of education on transgender experiences, especially in higher education and professional programs. So the class I teach is for a lot of counseling, future counselors, K-12 educators, school counselors, and most of them come in quite green, not knowing anything about how to support the community. So it's great that there's new resources coming out, but it's even more important that they're actually utilized in the classroom setting.
I think it's wonderful that you're starting this course there, and I'm hearing about courses popping up all over the country. It's really great to see these kind of issues finally being addressed. I agree with you that education is really important. You know, when I was in medical school, we learned very little about these kinds of issues, mm-hmm. and they did a national survey through Stanford of medical school deans and found that most medical schools had very little education about these issues. I'm sure that's true of most schools.
Yes, less than 5 hours on average on any LGBT issue.
Alisa, thank you very much for calling. Call us again. Laura Erickson-Schroth with us, editor of Trans Bodies, Trans Selves. And Aidan Key, a contributor to the book, director of the advocacy group Gender Diversity. And he wrote the section on children, which is intended to serve as a guide for parents of gender nonconforming kids. And having Aidan here is a great opportunity, I think, for some confused parents to call in. If there's anybody struggling with this in any way right now, your child seems to be gender nonconforming to one degree or another. You don't know how to support it, question it, deal with it. We invite you to call in and talk to Aidan Key, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or anyone else. And Aidan, we've heard something that you said, that the issue of gender nonconformity for children can be intellectually understandable for parents, but it's harder for them to understand it emotionally. Do you want to talk about that distinction?
Yeah, sure. You actually made a comment about an open and affirming parent that you'd had a conversation with recently, and I'd say that that parent has probably traveled a great distance to get to that place. The families that I work with come from all walks of life, and the majority of them, I could even say all of them, never expected to be navigating this issue and trying to find ways to support their child. The incredible component to this is that they love their children, and as they dig in to support their child in this journey, in this exploration, not knowing the destination, the end point, they immediately find the dearth of knowledge with providers, with teachers, places they expect to find expertise, they find very little. And immediately, as they're navigating their own personal challenges, they have to roll up their sleeves to advocate for their child and carve that path. So it is pretty impressive, this support offered, and usually in the face of a significant amount of criticism. When I offer trainings, I find that my audiences are everyone: social workers, doctors, psychiatrists and other therapists, teachers, administrators, you name it. Any place that a child is, there can be a transgender child there. And they all have recurring, actually kind of a small list of recurring questions that are almost put out there as if they're not expecting an answer.
One of the questions is this a phase, right?
Absolutely. Could this be a phase? What if they change their mind?
And your answer to that question, simply put, is yes, it could be a phase.
Exactly. It could be a phase. And so what would you do with any child who is exploring some aspect of themselves? We would provide an opportunity for them to grow and learn. That's what our schooling is all about, or any interests elsewhere. The fear is that we are making one single irrevocable decision for a child when we feel that they're too young to know. The reality is that we can present many, many, many small steps where decisions can be made, where minds can be changed to allow for that exploration for that child in a supportive environment where that child gets the message that who they innately are is a wonderful, beautiful child, that they know that from their parents and from society. That's the difference that we're dealing with today. In my mind, that's the tipping point. We are offering that support for that exploration, regardless of the endpoint, rather than turning to that child and saying, you don't fit, and this isn't going to fly in our society, so you need to change.
Elizabeth in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. I'm just wondering why there's been so little discussion about gender identity as an endocrine issue, since we know the solid science says, you know, if animals are affected, plant life is affected, males in particular, you know, the alligator situation down in Florida is causing mutations. Of course, the social issue is important, but it's a fundamental address, I think, in
changes
asking,
in people's endocrine system in this generation from, what, things that are in the food supply?
The air, the food, the soil.
All right, Elizabeth, if there's an uptick in people coming out as transgender, is that just people coming out because now they can come out for the first time, or do you think something, whether it's, you know, the environment causing endocrinal system changes society-wide or whatever, causing an uptick in more people actually feeling this way? Laura?
Oh, sorry. So I actually have done a review paper on this subject, so I'm glad that you're calling
this
in about this.
This question comes up?
Yeah, so this question comes up quite a bit. It comes up from people themselves who are transgender who are wondering about where they came from and why they identify the way that they do. And it also comes from, you know, the outside world, sometimes people who are genuinely curious and want to support, and sometimes from people who are trying to sort of prove a point in a negative way that somehow there's something wrong with transgender people. And I did work on a review paper about this topic in particular, and what are the biological studies that exist right now about transgender identity. And there are a number of studies that have been done, and there is some evidence from animal studies that there may be some effects of endocrinological changes on people's gender identity. But there isn't enough evidence to suggest that this is something that is purely biological at this point. We're still looking at a number of factors. There are certainly social factors and psychological factors. And, you know, I think that the take-home point is that it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter why we end up the way that we are. You know, I identify as a lesbian. It doesn't matter why I'm a lesbian. It just matters that people understand that and support that and support who I am. And I feel the same way about people who identify as transgender, that this is not something that we want to go and change and fix. And in fact, it contributes to the diversity of our communities and our world.
Anne in Hopatcong, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anne.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to just say thank you for this dialogue. I have a disabled child, and the trans discussion is having a big impact on the discussion about disabled people and their sexuality, so thank you. I wanted to ask if you could just explain some terms for clarity. Cis, what does cis mean? What does it mean to be an ally? And what is being done to educate police to avoid harassing behavior, exploitive practices?
Laura?
Sure. So let's start with the terms. I'm glad that you asked. So the term cis or cisgender is sometimes used within transgender communities or within LGBTQ communities to refer to people who are not transgender. And the terms come from the Latin. So cis means on the same side and trans means on the other side. And so the idea would be that these terms are non-judgmental ways to talk about how people identify, rather than using terms like non-biological or things like that, because we really don't know enough to say that. And then the term ally, I think, can be used in many different ways. An ally is someone who supports and stands up for people within any community and cares about them and does things to support their being. And then I don't know too much about what is being done to educate police. I wonder if you've heard anything about that.
I'm an art historian, and I participated in a project last year with artist dealing with technology, and an artist had made a bracelet that contacted other trans people when they were in crisis so that they wouldn't have to contact the police, because this particular artist had had so many negative confrontations with police, and I just wondered what's being done.
Yeah, so I don't know the answer to that question, but I certainly know that there are a lot of trans people across the country who have had run-ins with the police that have been very difficult. A lot of times people are targeted or even attacked by police officers. At the same time, I think there are some really wonderful police officers and people within that community that are doing things to try to make bridges with LGBT communities. But I don't know much about the specifics.
Anne, thank you for your call. Aiden, here's one from a parent. Carrie from White Plains posted this on our webpage. My daughter is dating a transgendered boy, and we love him. One thing that I worry about is for those transgender individuals who choose not to undergo sex reassignment surgery, finding health care providers who can really care for them. It is not easy for a transgendered man to walk into a midwife or gynecologist's office to get a pap smear. We need to get the medical field on board with welcoming transgendered individuals into their offices and taking care of all their health care needs. Any thought about that comment?
Yes, I have lots of thoughts about that, having experienced that myself. I have done my own gender transition from female to male and have to negotiate the specific aspects of my body that need care, and finding provider after provider after provider who is really unfamiliar with the needs of transgender people, and specifically even how to talk to us, how to communicate about bodies when they feel that the body and the identity don't align. So it is a huge challenge. I have learned to be my own best advocate, and oftentimes in the privacy of my home, pray that I won't have a serious life-threatening illness or injury, and then find a provider or first responders who are unfamiliar or who get panicked about how to offer support and care. It is a challenging question. And it's why quite a number of us who experience a gender transition or families who are trying to raise their children immediately have to roll up our sleeves to dig in and change these systems, raise the awareness of all professions to be able to provide us basic access that we need. I don't know that having a complete battery of surgeries, for example, is going to make it any easier for us to navigate a medical care system, because there are unique considerations when there are alterations to one's body that education needs to happen there as well. It's definitely a question, and we do our best. We do our best.
And we're going to leave it there with the muddling through conclusion that we do our best, we do our best. That applies to so many complexities of human existence. And out of the mouth of Aiden Key to the Trans Bodies, Trans Selves community. He's director of the advocacy group Gender Diversity, wrote the section on children to serve as a guide for parents in the new book, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, a resource for the transgender community. We also thank the editor of the book, Laura Erickson-Schroth, who is a psychiatry resident at the NYU Medical Center. For those of you who know the book, Our Bodies, Ourselves, it looks just like it. It's a huge, it's like 700, 600-page, oversized paperback book.
We're trying to burden people in their backpacks. We're trying to put something very, very heavy in there.
With all kinds of sections on things from employment to identity to law enforcement to family relations, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves. Thank you both very much for the conversation.
Thank you so much,
thank
Brian.
You.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll check with Emily Bazelon from Slate, who's following the end-of-term Supreme Court decisions coming down these days, as always happens at the end of June. We'll see what they're telling us about a new wrinkle in gun rights and some other things. Stay with us.